Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Schertel from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from the Cleveland area once again is Casey Ingram. Casey is General Counsel and Chief Compliance Officer of ISK Americas, which is a global chemical company that is focused on crop protection, wood preservatives, pigments, and animal health. Casey, first, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Adam. I appreciate the opportunity.
And we appreciate it as well. Now, you've got some interesting experience. We're going to talk today about working with the regulatory team. You know, a lot of organizations, not just yours, have a large regulatory component. In addition to compliance, there's a regulatory team that you need to work with. You've been doing that for the with the regulatory department for a lot of years. And I think it might be good if we started, if you could first talk to us about how you got into chemical compliance.
Well, to be honest, Adam, I kind of fell into it. I was working as a trial attorney at a law firm, and one of our clients called out and said they needed some help. The EPA was investigating them. And then I ended up being seconded to the company for over a year. Then I ended up being hired by the company, and I was hired to develop a pesticide compliance program for them because they did lawn chemicals, lawn and garden, and that was what was being investigated by the EPA, were their pesticide registrations and whether they complied with all the rules. And it was a great experience, and I sort of trial by fire hose mentality to learn, but I saw just about everything that could go wrong and ended up becoming a chemical compliance attorney at that point, and I've been doing it ever since.
Wow. Now, as the chief compliance officer for ISK, I mean, you're dealing with more than chemicals compliance. You're dealing with the whole program as a whole. But what's your role specifically when it comes to regulatory compliance? How do you balance that out with what you do versus what the regulatory team does?
Well, as the chief compliance officer, as you say, I have the anti-bribery and anti-trust and what little bit of anti-money laundering we have to worry about, trade compliance, et cetera. For the chemical regulatory compliance, I look at the big picture controls. So the day-to-day activities are all handled by the regulatory department as to, you know, what do you have to put on a label? What test do you have to do to get a product registered? What do you have to report? I don't touch any of that. What I focus on are the high level. If this action doesn't occur, we could have a violation. And so I see myself as assisting them to make sure that no issues occur and that we have controls in place that we can audit it and make sure that we find, fix, and prevent any problems that may arise.
Yeah, which, you know, I think is a great strength in that, you know, the tools for the compliance team as a whole end up supporting those efforts. Now, you mentioned just a second ago that you developed a program to find, fix, and prevent compliance issues. How do you coordinate, you know, that process with what regulatory and other departments are doing in that regard?
So I think a good way to describe this would go back to the first one I ever developed. I was brought in because the company initially tried to have an outside firm develop the program. And I'll be honest, it just didn't work. Having outsiders come into a program and try to lead it, they didn't understand the processes that occurred within the company. And it's great to get outside support, but the process really needs to be controlled inside, because what they ended up developing, no one followed it because it was too complicated and didn't match the operations. So the first thing that we did when we were brought in, they said, you know, you need to make something that people will follow that keeps us out of trouble. That's your mandate. So we figured out what are the rules, and we went through and said, okay, these are all the things that can get us in trouble, and listed out all the rules. And then we ran that by an outside counsel and said, did we miss anything? And they said, nope, you've got all the rules in place. Okay, that's perfect. Then the next thing we did is we spent several weeks interviewing everyone in the regulatory department, supply chain, marketing, purchasing, anyone who had a role in the process of buying the raw materials to selling the end good, and asked them, just what do you do? And wrote down all their processes. Then we went through those processes and said, okay, where can I establish a control that gives me a go, no-go point? So the previous program they had went through and had a control for every requirement of what had to be on a label. We said, well, that's too much. What we need to know is the label has to match the EPA-approved label. So before you put it on a bottle, you need a control that says someone will check that the label matches the other label. And then we would establish these various controls throughout the process and then go back to everyone that was involved and say, okay, here's what we found. Can you do this? And then they'd tell us why it was all wrong and it didn't work. So then we'd start over again. And we went through that process probably a half dozen times till we finally reached a point where everybody bought into it. And there would be meetings where people would just sit and yell at each other saying, you can't do this, you can't do that, it'll never work, it'll all fall apart. And those were actually the best meetings because we saw where the issues were, and then we could go back, change it, and eventually everyone's on the same page. And everyone signed off, said we can meet these controls, and it worked.
Wow, it's interesting because, you know, there's a lot of time people spend doing risk assessments, and you made a good argument for having a sort of a controls assessment process in there. The process, as you identified it, you know, at its core, it's pretty simple in terms of just creating an inventory and seeing what the issues are. But, you know, you said it got pretty heated. You know, I imagine there were a bunch of issues that came out throughout the process. Were there, and, you know, what are things people should be watching for?
Well, to be clear, no one buys in, or not everyone will buy in at the beginning. You'll have a few people who say, this is great, I'll do whatever you want. But there's always going to be the naysayers who say, we can't make this work. You're going to slow us down. You're going to disrupt production. We're not going to be able to do what you want us to do, or you're going to miss something. And so what I did in that process is I found out who those people were, and they were pretty easy to find because they were the loudest ones in the room. And I would just sit down with them for a meeting and let them vent for about an hour and tell me everything that would go wrong. And I wouldn't say anything. I'd just take notes, thank them for their time. Then I'd go back to them at a later point, try to address all their concerns. And then I would meet with them regularly throughout the process and say, okay, here's where we are. What do you think? By the end of the process, and there were maybe six or eight people that were really squeaky wheels, they were all on board because they were being heard and brought into it. So instead of trying to fight them, instead I joined them and brought them in and gave them a voice. And we still got to the same place, and it just slowed it down a bit in the beginning. But I figured it was better to do it slower in the beginning and do it right than put something in place that they're going to complain about for the next 5 years.
Yeah, and I imagine that. Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, and we also had a team set up of internal audit, HR, and then the various groups that were affected, that one person from that group each week we would meet for breakfast, and the compliance group would buy breakfast, and we would just give an update of what was going on and keep everyone in the loop so there were no surprises at all. Because one thing that I think people miss is they'll build something and then present it, and people say, well, wait a minute, you never asked me about this. I didn't get any ownership. I don't like how you did it, even if they would have done it the same way. So we were trying to adopt them from the beginning and bring them in so they felt a part of the process. And they couldn't come back later and say, well, we didn't know, because they were there each week when we gave them updates.
That's great. I mean, and, you know, makes a couple of real good points. There is one, you know, people want to be heard. And by letting the people who had objections know that they were heard was terrific. And then secondly, even the ones who, you know, weren't squeaky wheels, making sure that they were kept apprised and kept current is a good way to ensure buy-in. Now, one of the questions along the lines of keeping current is, how do you keep current to ensure that appropriate risks are addressed? I mean, you know, the regulatory frameworks out there are just changing fairly constantly.
To me, the most important thing is to know our internal business. So I spend a lot of time attending meetings. We have actually weekly meetings of various groups in our company, and I'm always invited as optional, but I don't ever view them as optional. And no one really asks me anything in the meetings. I just sit there and listen and see what's going on. Okay, these are our plans. Here's the products we're getting out. Here's our timelines. And you can start to detect if there's going to be an issue earlier or if there's something that needs to change. And then in coordination with that, I attend webinars. I go to the Compliance and Ethics Institute every year. I read, well, you know, when you send out the weekly compliance emails from the SECE, I read those. I keep up to date with all the various newsletters that come out from consultants and environmental firms. And then I circulate those internally. If I see something that applies, I'll create an email and send it to everyone who's affected just so they're aware. And then I'll raise it up in the call saying, okay, I understand you're wanting to do this. By the way, there's been a change in tariffs that we need to be aware of that may affect our import-export compliance. And just being there, I found for the most part, and listening keeps me up to date on what issues that might arise in the future.
Interesting. The value of just listening is often underrated. Now, for our listeners that work in highly regulated areas, what advice do you have, we're running out of time now, to ensure that there is really the right amount of collaboration between the compliance and the regulatory groups?
My first piece of advice is just be present. Make sure people know who you are and are comfortable talking with you. I know at one company I was at, the regulatory group was at one end of the campus and the compliance group was at the other end of the campus. So a couple of days a week, I would go into the regulatory department, sit in a spare cubicle, and just do my work from that spot. And it was amazing the number of people that would walk by and just raise a question that they didn't necessarily think was a big deal at the time, but I was there, so they asked. Or a conversation would start and I could hear it, and I might be able to step in and say, well, here's something you might want to consider. That just being there, making people comfortable, the more they see you, the less likely they view you as the compliance guy. You're Casey or Adam or whoever. You're just another person, and that helps a lot. The second one goes back to building the controls about what people actually do. So instead of building controls and saying, adjust your operations to meet this requirement, we determined the operations and made controls that were minimum interference and easy to perform. Because if it's hard, people won't do it. They'll want to, they'll have the right goal, but it ended up getting pushed aside. So the easier we make it for them, the more likely it is to happen. And the last part of that is just knowing the rules. If you're not technically competent and can't understand what they're doing or what the rules are that apply for this regulatory arena, you won't have any credibility. So that's why I spend a lot of time reading, listening, just learning the rules so people will listen when I step in and say, here's a control you need to add.
Well, Casey, thanks for sharing with us the rules of the road for working with regulatory successfully. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.